is after him, but it's Faheen who's bounding clear up the hill, and he is a machine. Faheen maintains his unbeaten record, and it's a treble for Willie Mullins and Remy Walsh. Faheen's a champion. Arctic Forest.
It was never in any doubt that it's going to be a magnificent hat-trick in the race for the Willie Mullins trade for Vega, and a treble on the day for Ruby. He didn't have to move a muscle.
Well, welcome, welcome, welcome all to the very first episode of our brand new Countdown to Cheltenham series with just 9 weeks to go to the Cheltenham Festival. Yep, it's all going to build up from today. My name is Patrick Connelly and I'm joined by regular contributor, pundit, trader and all-round decent bloke, Frank Hickey. Frank, you were off last week. You're back. You're recharged. You're ready to go.
Recharged might be going a bit far. I'm back, yeah. Minding the little fella is tiring. I'd prefer to be working a 12-hour day, to be honest.
Five 12-hour shifts would take precedence over 4 hours looking after the kid.
And we're like one full day. Like, it's just, you can't take your eye off him. He's just non-stop.
A lot of my mates have kids, and I'm not going to lie, no one is selling it to me.
No. You know, it's good fun and it's great and whatever, but like, yeah, it is tiring.
I bet it is. I'll stick to the puppies for now. And we've got a brand new contributor, and he's going to be with us for every week at the Countdown to Cheltenham. Before I introduce him, no Ruby Walsh, by the way, who has taken a holiday this week, but he will be back next week. Don't be too disappointed. And in his place, but he's going to be here every week anyway, is Irish Field columnist, former Irish Field Naps table winner. Sorry, Rory. I didn't see whether you won it this year. Rory DeLargy and regular podcaster himself. So, Rory, you didn't win this year's, but you did win last year's.
I won the curtailed Racing Post flat Naps table in 2020. Some would say with no racing in April and May, it doesn't count an awful lot, but it'll do for me.
What was the big winner that got? Did you get one big one that got you home?
Majestic Dawn was probably the biggest one, the Cambridgeshire winner at 40s. Yeah, but I think I had a 40-1 winner in the first month as well. So that was a
you had two 40-1 winners. If you had lost it from that position, that would have been a feat.
It would have been slightly embarrassing. Yes. Yeah.
Fair play. Listen, Rory, it's great to have you on the pod, and because you're new to the From the Horse's Mouth podcast, I've compiled a few questions so that our loyal listeners can understand what makes Rory DeLargy. Now, first thing, a lot of people are on Twitter, as are you. Now, your name on Twitter is, excuse this pronunciation, Helensar, is it?
Helensar, yeah. It's a number of people's names put together. Oh. The name of a racehorse from the 80s. I'd originally chosen Eddie Wee as my online name, again a horse trained by Billy Rook in Kalibaki near where I grew up, but I kept getting strange messages from people in Hong Kong asking if I knew them, so I decided to change to Helensar because no one's going to remember anyone called that. So she was a mare, which is slightly strange, but she was a nice she was a kind of mare who would run all the big handicap hurdles through the season. A good old stick. She didn't win anything massive, but she was placed in the Ladbroke, and she wasn't beaten far in the Schweppes at Newbury and stuff like that there. So I was quite fond of her because she was trained up the road.
Right. Your best winning bet. I'm hoping you backed either of those 240-1 shots you mentioned. Give us your best winner of all time.
Of all time. Oh, yeah. Lordy. Bizarrely enough, a horse that no one will remember. I backed a horse called Hot Diggity in a selling hurdle.
Good tune.
At Musselburgh about 20 years, no, maybe 30 years ago now. Oh. And it's just one of those things I liked. I followed the trainer, the late Peter Monteith trained it. And I just got into my head, if you really fancy one that's a bigger price than it should be, you should have a bigger bet on it. And I thought this would be a 10-1 shot. And it was 66-1. Oh. So I had a 5 reach way on it. And then it drifted to 100-1. And for the first time in my life, I pressed up and I had another 5 reach way on it. So that was probably my, it wasn't my biggest win, but it was a massive win for me at the time. I was just a young lad. And it was the first time I used those proper betting instincts of stepping in again when you think you're getting good value.
Wow. So 10 or each way on 101 poke. That's not, what age were you at the time?
Oh, I'd have been 19, I think.
Oh, yeah. Tenerife in a 100-pound poke at the age of 19.
That was a good weekend, I'd say. Oh.
I was working 7 days a week at that stage, just moved to London, and I was earning $7,000 a year. So it's pretty impossible to live on that. So it's nice to have,
I'd say, all
nice
your
a bit of spending money.
All your mates were saying, go pro on the back of one bet. As we're talking Cheltenham Festival, give us your best memory of Cheltenham Festival. Can be betting or otherwise.
I wouldn't say my best memory, but again, getting back to a decent bet, it's probably my worst bad beat of all time, but it was it was my biggest bet of all time as well. I backed Asian Maze in the Champion Hurdle. So pity Ruby's not here to.
Oh, don't worry, he'll be here.
Remember this. And I was convinced she'd run on the Champion Hurdle. No one else was. They thought she'd run on the stairs. I saw her win at Punchestown the previous season. I thought she was an absolute superstar. I grew up on Dawn Run, and I thought she was the next Dawn Run. And I just kept backing her at 100, 150 to 1 for the Champion Hurdle on the exchanges. And then a couple of firms went non-runner, no bet on the Champion as well. And they went 66 to 1, which was completely the wrong price. So I got really stuck in then. And on the day, she was price-wise in the Racing Post. She went off at about 12 to 1, I think. And she was brought down by a swinging hurdle halfway through the race. And then she's come and beat the horses who finished second and third in the Champion by miles at entry on her next start. So that was very much what might have been. That was proper retirement betting then. I just plowed into it every opportunity for 3 or 4 months.
I think, because Ruby's going to be on every single pod, as are you, between now and Cheltenham Festival, I think we try and get Asia May's reference into every single week. we try and get one.
I'm not sure I can survive it, to be honest, but there you go.
Don't worry, Ruby will tell you where to go. There'll be a bit of crack anyway. Okay, lads, let's talk. The two races we're going to discuss today, and of course it is a very large festival, potentially getting larger if the rumours are to be believed, but we're going to cover every race between now and the festival. So there will be some weeks where we look at races where, look, it's hard to know what's going to win, it's hard to know what's going to run, but as Rory just said there, he's not afraid of a big price, and these are the races potentially you can get big prices by knowing or guessing which horse is going to run in which race. The two today we're going to focus on are the Cheltenham Bumper and the National Hunt Chase. Before we crack on with the Bumper, what do you lads, I'll go to you, Frank, your thoughts on the National Hunt season so far? Unmute yourself.
Yeah, it's been pretty good, yeah, enjoyable. I suppose you just realise how much talent Willie's got the last month, haven't you? Frightening.
Yeah. I mean, the first few weeks, maybe month, and he wasn't firing because he wasn't running his big horses, and people are like, maybe
but
this
just
year.
The ground. We all know it's the ground. Like, once the ground goes soft, Willie will get them all out, and it's just been phenomenal. And if he carries that on to the spring like he normally does, he's in for a mighty spring.
Oh, he is. Rory, your initial reaction so far from the... Are we at the halfway stage? Maybe just a little behind, I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose in terms of time, we are. But it feels like the season started about 2 weeks ago, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That's really what it is. It stepped up a gear massively. With Nicky Henderson not particularly keen to run his big guns early in the season either, and Willie waiting for the ground. It feels like the season has kicked up a gear massively around Christmas time. And... We talk about Cheltenham as if it's a be-all and end-all, but, you know, the likes of Willie Mullins make it clear that, you know, that's the spring is when you want to be hitting the target, whether that's at Cheltenham or the entry at Punchestown. And that's the way the season has developed in the last 10 years or so. You know, when I was a lad, everyone wanted to win the big sponsored races every weekend, but if you kept running your horses through the winter, they weren't much good to you come March. So, you know, it makes perfect sense that Willie essentially trains with February, March, April and May in mind.
Exactly. And he's no mug, Mr. Mullins. When you include Otoy in that spring with the May Festival, they've got like the Euros that he brings home from Paris as well. Amazing. Okay, and before we get cracking, sorry, on the Bumper, quick question. Any anti-post bets so far, Frank, on Cheltenham?
I had a number of them.
A number? Give us the
three
best
or four.
One. Hopefully.
I'm trying to think what they were. I took two were very kind of speculative.
Excellent.
One was Jungle Boogie for the festival.
Of course it was.
Chase. The other one was Jory Colum for the Alba Barnett.
Okay.
I wouldn't be certain they're definitely going to run there at all, but it was kind of taking a bit of a chance. And the other two were Briska for the Boodles. Wouldn't be giving up on him after yesterday, and actually...
Maybe it was even better that he was
I think it might be even better. Look, it was very flat, but it was his third run in 29 days. So I'd be a little less disappointed maybe than some were. And the other one is seeing Cal Brass each way in the Ryanair. I didn't pull the trigger quick enough after the King George, but I did have a good look at it maybe 4 or 5 days after, going, Jesus, there's not that much in behind Alaho, and were for any reason Alaho to miss or go to the Gold Cup, which I think he should, but it's unlikely to happen. But St. Cavas, like, you only have to go back. He was only beaten a neck by Min. He was unlucky. He was trained by Harry Whittington. I'm not criticising him, but you'd imagine Paul Nicholls is going to get a bit of improvement out of him. So I just thought the way he travelled in the King George, and I don't like knocking a fellow West Cartman, but I think Kevin Sheehan could have done a bit better in him.
Well, I think he thought the King George was 2.5 miles, I think.
The way he went through the race, like, obviously starting, like, the way he was ridden, like, he was never going to get home. But if he could replicate that in a Ryanair, you know, you'd imagine he'd the frame at the very least. And if for any reason Alho wasn't there or underperformed slightly, he'd probably be the one to take advantage. But
4 anti-post wagers already, Frank. That's impressive. Rory, had you got any in the portfolio?
No, I backed St. Calvados anti-post for the Ryanair last year, and that's why I've had no bets this year. to train a horse for one race all year and then pull them out on good to soft ground because it's not soft enough. It's just bonkers, as far as I'm concerned. I thought it was a cracking bet. Well, I mean, he wouldn't have beaten Alaho in it last year, but I thought he was, you know, a surprisingly big price anti-post for that, and I'd be with Frank on it. But yeah, I got stung last year doing that, and I tend to leave my anti-post bets until I see the entries from most of the races, and
fair enough,
where I see entries that I think are unusual or interesting, then I delve into them a bit deeper and maybe find a better two then.
Okay, let's see. Obviously no entries for the two races we're going to talk about today, but we have interestingly a few horses, mainly one actually, who's entered in the National Chase. Well, hopefully be entered in that, but also entered in the Gold Cup. Now, let's talk about the bumper. Okay, Rory, starting with you. Look, every year's bumper is a great race. What's your record like?
In terms of the percentage of winners I've had, it's pretty poor, to be perfectly honest. But I did manage to snaffle Q Card. Andy Post as well. And again, just shows you're better waiting for the day for most of your outsiders. I think back to about 33s and... I suppose walking into the parade ring that day, someone said he was 85 or 90 on Betfair.
Wow.
And I was thinking of either I've got this horribly wrong or I should be pressing up, but no opportunity there. So yeah, that's the one bright spot there. I think I'd done Gweeb as well, but Q Card's pretty much the one that I remember in the bumper.
Frank, just looking at the market now, and I probably should give listeners a quick rundown of how we look. 3-1 favorite American, Michael Gordon Elliott, Facio Vega, on breeding, could be very, very good, obviously, out of Covega. She is 7-2. 6-1 Redemption Day for Willie Mullins, 10-1 Pink in the Park for Willie Mullins. Springwell Bay is 14-1. The German bred Estacas is 16-1, as is the Big Doyen, and It's What Unites Us. And look, again, I'm looking at all these horses at the top of the market, Frank, and I'm looking at Irish, bar one. And that's ex-Irish. It's going to be an Irish winner, isn't it?
You'd be very surprised if it wasn't at the moment. Like Springwell Bay was very impressed with Mark Reyes, and we might touch on him a little bit later. But you'd be very surprised if Willie, like them, American Mike sets a very high standard. But the two, Facil Vega and Redemption Day, very different the way they won. Facil Vega was good on the clock. Redemption Day didn't have to be good on the clock. He just toyed with them. Like the rumors were that maybe Redemption Day was the one maybe a little bit working better at home, but Facil Vega was impressive at Leopardstown. So now you've got three, you know, really top class looking horses heading for the bumper, and you just hope they all get there.
Ah, yeah.
We have a cracking race.
Always the way. Okay, Rory, let's start with American Mike. Gordon Elliott in the Bechtel Stud colors. Looks to be following the Envoy Allen path.
Yeah, I mean, that's... race he won at Navan last time out, which is the future champions bumper, has been won by Envoy Allen and also by Sam Crowe back in the day as well. So it's a well-trodden path. It's a race with a very good record of doing what it says in the tin, despite the fact that it's usually quite a small field event. It was impressive first time out at Down Royal. I think that was a race that Sir Gerhardt had won the previous season as well. So, you know, Gordon's, he's doing what he's making it clear that this is pretty much the anointed one from the yard with the races that he's run in. And he's been very impressive in the way that he's won those races. It helped as well. The Navan race has run at a good gallop. So he was able to put up a good speed figure, which is something you're usually missing with bumper performers. The way the races are run, you're usually having to judge style and work out how much there is left there. Whereas at least with American Mike, the way the race at Navan was set up for him, you're able to put a good figure in him and you know that he's the one that they all have to aim at. Very similar in terms of his background and the way he went about things too. And while, and I think he might even have won the race by exactly the same margin as that one did back in the day as well. So the comparisons are obvious, aren't they?
They really are. Look, he's 3-1 now, Frank. Is he the type of horse that maybe we'd look to take on, be it on the day, be it in the anti-post market? Because favourites have got a pretty dismal record of race.
You wouldn't be taking him on because he's the favourite. You know, you'd be taking him on because you'd believe maybe Willie's two are, big threats to him, and you just believe the price is too short. Like, if you're looking at it now, in our field book, him and Facile Vega are the two big losers and the only two losers we have, quite chunky amounts, and then everything else a winner. So you know, is there much benefit in trying to be really aggressive against him at this stage? Potentially not until maybe the Dublin Race Festival, see what happens there. On the day, I'd be surprised if you're not getting, if it's not maybe, provided the other two get there and have run well or haven't run since, that it's not 3-1 the field at some stage the day before. Just if you have three horses with that sort of profile, it'd be very hard to see one of them going off sub 2-1. Well, maybe not go off, but not be, a good deal bigger the evening before. At least you wouldn't know if there'd be some sort of big move. But yeah, I think you'll get 3-1 in around the time anyway. So I wouldn't think there's a need to go steaming in now.
I think I read somewhere, I could be wrong, correct me if I am, that he's probably going straight to the festival. So the chance of him changing price or markedly between now and then is... It's not
unless something happens. Say the two, I don't know what the plans are for the two Willie ones, but say the two of them run the Dublin Race Festival and one of them gets well beaten, then potentially, he could shorten because one would be out of the picture, but it's not likely he'd shorten much.
Yeah. You gave one of our post-Christmas podcasts, you asked Ruby a great question that the presenter really should have asked him. Which of the bumper horses would Ruby like to ride most in the Champion Bumper? Do you remember his answer? The four winners of the at Leopardstown, that is.
Well, he did say that before Christmas he'd have ridden Redemption Day, but after he'd have ridden Facile Vega. So
very good.
It'll tell you there's not... I do be listening, PK.
Yeah, well, very good. Or not.
It would suggest there maybe isn't a huge amount between them. And, Redemption Day, we just don't know what else is there with him. Like, he wasn't asked a question. Do you know what I mean? Just ones he liked, so...
What did you make of Redemption Day, Rory?
I thought he was visually very impressive. My question with him was, he'd clearly been working very well and he was fancied to win the race and he looked very professional. And I'm always... The tricky thing with horses like that is working out how much they have to give. Patrick did ask him to quicken up at the end. I know he's ostensibly hard held, but he wasn't stopping the horse from quickening away. He did shake the reins at him and say, right, use a turn of foot, show what you've got, which the horse did. So, probably what he did on paper was the equal of Facile Vega. But the impression I got watching the pair of them was that Facile Vega was learning on the job, was a bit greener, wasn't entirely sure what to do, had to be nudged along once or twice in the race. And I like to see that because you see that they're learning something that the other one, Redemption Day had clearly learned all that at home, didn't have to be asked any questions to take a good position. And then, had the race set up for him and Patty just had to shake the reins to get the result. He pulled up quick enough after the line, I thought. I don't read a huge amount into that, but I do like to see them when they're hard to pull up. It gives you an impression that there is a fair bit more under the bonnet. And the impression with Redemption Day is he must be better than that because he's done it so easily. But sometimes these horses are very professional. What they show you is reasonably close to what they have. And working out what improvement there is the big... That's the big question we have as punters for the Champion Bumper. There's much more hidden in this division than there is in all the others because we see less of all the horses, and you're looking at these impressive performances, just working out who could have done a stone better than that. And the style is not always the easiest to read. As I said, Facile Vega impressed me because you could almost see the penny dropping in that horse's head as the race went on. And I thought he was very, very strong at the finish. And he's also not particularly like his dam in terms of looks. He's got a lot of scope physically. to do better as well. So I was marginally more impressed by him, but it's, you know, these are notional calls, and you're always going to get different opinions from different people about them as well.
It's nice for us to get you to make your debut in a race or in a pod where we're covering the bumper and the national chase, isn't it? Well, we got you started on a nice, easy race. That's the new hipster's way of assessing a horse's ability, how well it runs after it finishes, isn't it? I remember Ruby mentioned it. I think it was Envoy Allen up at Down Royal, I think, and Sam Crow. They won the same novice chase, didn't they? Yeah, and Ruby said Sam Crow stopped, Envoy Allen kept going. Yeah. And I was, oh, geez, it's not something I ever really considered. But Ruby definitely takes fair stock in it. So fair play mentioning that. I want to talk about a couple of other ones for Willie Mullins, unsurprisingly. Pink in the Park is an interesting one. The Dam was a nice horse in the same colours. One of Patrick's mother's colours, Willie's wife's. We haven't seen her in a while, though. Got to be a concern.
Yeah, I'm not particularly concerned about the absence, but I'm not privy to any whispers or rumors about her absence. It was late September she won at the Stole. She's won by a wide margin. I think she proved herself good enough to be considered in the same category as the Christmas winners, and maybe once you've got to that stage, I think Willie's happy enough just to say, right, well, I know where you are now, and then we can move on again in the new year. That's the way I would read it. She's won by 14 lengths. It wasn't a strong race in behind her, but she showed a remarkable turn of foot to win it. The second that Patrick asked for an effort from her, she put the race to bed immediately. And again, talking about horses galloping through the line, she really did. I think he struggled to pull her up afterwards. So I thought in terms of style, she was right up there. She did. You wanted to stick her in a notebook straight away after that. So she's probably £7 behind what the others have done in terms of assessing the collateral form, which is never easy in bumpers anyway. But she did give the impression there was more to come. And she's from a very good family. As she said, the dam was smart enough. And she's a half-sister to City Island. Be interesting to see what colours she runs in next time. Yeah. Obviously, she runs in Jackie Mullins's colours at the moment, but horses like that tend to be for sale. So she might have the Dublin Racing Festival on the agenda. Nice little shop window for a champion bumper contender. And the £7 allowance she gets would be hugely important if she went that route. And we've seen that before, obviously, with Relegate.
Getting pretty niche here, but Patrick Mullins, so he as an amateur can only ride in so many open races, essentially, races not confined to amateurs. However, there is a sort of a loophole that if the horse is owned by his family, it doesn't count. Am I right in saying that?
I'm not entirely sure. That's an interesting one. But
I think that's the case. So if he rides for his mother, then that doesn't count as an open race. So he'd probably be hoping they don't sell her. Not that, obviously, he's got a big decision to make anyway in the bumper, but it was a really interesting rule. I read on Twitter. So it comes with a massive health warning, but I did read that somewhere. Right, Frank, you're fresh off babysitting duties. You're back with us. I want to talk to you about the big Doyle. Actually, how's the kid getting on? You keep disappearing. Everything okay?
Yeah, he's, you put on YouTube and you put on Peppa, and every so often the ads pop up and he hasn't got the skip ads yet. He just fires the phone on the ground.
He's not getting
He hasn't napped yet, so he's like a briar. So, yeah.
Oh, dear. That's okay.
Look forward to now.
You need to find like Peppa on loop or something. Is there not like an hour-long loop or something?
Yeah, there should be. Yeah, not an expert in it yet. I need to find... Dear.
My youngest fella's first words were skip ad.
And it's only what, like probably 10 seconds, and they're like, nope, throw the photo. Yeah, okay, right. Well, before the next ad, then, talk to me about the big Doyen, Frank, a horse who created a quite big impression when winning for Peter Fahey last time out. A little bit of a form collateral with him, actually, as well. One of the Willie Mullins horses took on the second that day in Christmas. Your thoughts?
Look, he's good. I think he'll be one that might be better when he goes out and trip over jumps, potentially. Okay. Look, he was impressive enough winning at Roscommon last September at that form. Been frying to the second Ballyglass, won a subtle bumper on his next start for New Connections. But the third, Captain Lightfoot, he was beaten 76 lengths by Facil Vega when finishing 8th of 16 at Christmas. It gives you, look, you can't take it literally, but it gives you some indication maybe of what, how to compare the two races a little bit. He was very impressed for their penalty at Punchdown in November. But again, the 15th length second, Cool Survivor, was beaten 30 lengths behind Vasil Vega in six. So again, you have a second sort of line where you can kind of go, he's a little bit to improve. And I think maybe in time, he will be better maybe over 2.5 or 3 miles over jumps. But at the same time, he was very impressive the last day, and, you know, he couldn't have won any easier. I think he'd have a bit defined though to win a champion bumper myself.
Okay. Apparently, there's a very nice bunch of lads on the Big Doyen, producer Marcus, that you just told us. And best of luck to them from us here on the From the Horses.
It'd be great. It'd be great to see, you know, smaller owners win the champion bumper. It'd be brilliant. Unbelievable.
16-1 currently at the time of recording. My favorite phrase. Okay. We're getting into the bigger price horses. Speaking of the bigger price horses, the British horses in most races at Shetland Festival are the bigger price ones. Is there anything that stood out for you so far, Springwell Bay, perhaps, Rory?
Yeah, Springwell Bay was very impressive at Market Race and won by a wide margin there, having joined John Joe from Mags Mullins, I think. That was again visually impressive performance, but the British bumpers tend to be a lot less competitive than the Irish ones, and the horses he beat there at Market Raisin were a pretty sorry lot, to be honest. He couldn't have done it any better than he did, but again, a lot of those horses in that race were there as a prelude to going hurdling, and those who've gone hurdling haven't done an awful lot since, so you just be a little bit wary of taking that form too literally. But yeah, there've been previous winners of the race who've had a similar sort of background, one good run in an Irish bumper early in the season, or sort of, you know, Punchestown, for example, then a run for an English yard and straight to Cheltenham, Cheltenham being the obvious recent example of a bumper winner who's done that. I'm not sure if John Joe's hell-bent on
the race,
training a bumper winner. So I'd be wary of back in Springwell Bay anti-post, but if he ends up in the entries and they suggest he's going to go there, then he'd be interesting enough. But I thought, it's one of those, you look at the race and you think he's clearly a very good prospect down the line. But in terms of bumper form, I think that was a weaker race than a lot that we've seen in Ireland in the last few weeks.
Fair enough. Okay. I want to talk about the obvious one. We all knew that there was going to be a horse trained in Germany by Galileo that was going to win the bumper, lads. It was written in the stars. Estacas is the name of this horse. Now, he's trained by top-class German trainer Andreas Wohler. The Germans won the Ark last year. They're going to win the bumper with this horse. He's currently 16-1. Roy, tell us a bit about this, because this is just a very strange type of horse for the bumper.
Yeah, I mean, you see this happen occasionally. You've got a horse that's bred to win group races in the flat, and then for whatever reason, it's too immature to run, or it won't go in the stalls or whatever at home. So they end up, and often we see those horses sold at the sales, ex-Godolphin horses, ex-Shingle Habit horses, whatever it happens to be. And often a small trainer gets them and wins a bumper, and you've got a dream there. But here, this horse remains with the in the original ownership, was bred by his owners. Who are a big operation in Germany as well. We're not talking about someone who's got lucky with this, and obviously a nomination to Galileo is a hell of a lot of money. He's a three parts brother to a multiple Group One winner, in Earl of Tinsdale, who stayed very well as well. And Andreas Wohler, he doesn't tend to send jumpers across here. He's had three runners and bumpers in the last 20 years in the UK. Two wins in a second from those. Interestingly, the first horse he ran in a bumper here back in 2006 had an even better pedigree than this. It was Giant's Causeway, half brother to a German Derby winner. So you know, that was an absolutely fantastic pedigree. That was beaten on debut, and then a week later it was running for someone else. So my thinking when I saw this horse come over was Andreas Wohler has got the horse. He's had it in training since it was two or three. It's been two backwards run in the flat. He knows it's the obvious route here is, you know, if you can win a bumper with it, then you can sell it on for a reasonable amount of money. So bring it over to the UK for a bumper and then wave bye back to the horse and do a deal with someone. That first horse he had was went to Milton Harris afterwards. I think ended up with Mouse Morris, ended up being no good at all. After won a bumper in a second start, looked quite promising and then went the wrong way. Similarly, the last bumper winner he had, looked a nice type early on and then went backwards from that. So it'll be interesting to see how this horse progresses. He looked fairly clueless at Ascot for much of the race and then finished very strongly to win. But I'd be a little wary of that in that, you know, you kind of got the impression he'd been pulled out of a field a fortnight before and stuck in there, and he was learning all the time. But given his pedigree, I think they would have, he'd have been well tried at home.
Yeah.
So how much improvement there is in him is open to debate. That looked a good enough bumper on paper, though. Ascot bumpers tend to be reasonably good, and he was due to run in a very good listed bumper at Ascot after that, but because of travel restrictions, he couldn't travel over, so he was a non-runner on the day. We'd have learned more about him there. The most interesting thing about him is the fact that Andreas Voller still trains him. Or as far as we know, he still trains
well,
him.
Well, yeah. It'd be interesting to see the colours and everything else when he next runs.
But if he's entered up again, it'd be interesting to see which yard he's entered from, and then we'll see whether he's heading to Cheltenham. As I said, the previous two bumper runners for the yard, I think one of them ran in the Aintree bumper behind the new one. Neither of them went to Cheltenham, so it'll be interesting to see if that's the plan with him.
Yeah, he's a fascinating runner. Okay, lads, we've pretty much covered most of them. There's a few horses I haven't touched on for Cornelia. It's what Unitas, Harmonia Maker, they're about 16-1, the Mediator 20-1. Frank, quick word on them before we get the picks.
You know what unites us? I think Gordon said afterwards he's more likely to go to Fairy House.
Okay.
Harmonia Maker. I'd be surprised. I think he might have been on about Aintree, was it? Dublin Race Fest and Aintree, maybe for her. The Mediator, impressive at Dunroyal. We haven't seen him since, though. That was back in October. So whether he's been, you know, kept back for a spring campaign, I'm not sure. And there was one I wanted to mention, though.
Absolutely.
Is Paul Nolan's horse, Sander Clegane. Pretty decent effort on debut, won very easily. Attracted a bit of money overnight as well with us, which is always a good sign too, that they kind of know what they have. The time was decent compared to the rate and novice hurdle, look, even allowing for hurdles and whatever, but he's won at a price that if he was aimed at, you wouldn't put a line through straight away anyway, that's for sure.
Sander Clegane, currently 25-1 for the bumper. Mark Walsh, who won't leave us alone, the producer today, says he's named after a character in Game of Thrones. I'm assuming that's a he. I haven't seen it. No, I watched two episodes of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I've never watched Game of Thrones ever.
Is it better than Peppa Pig? No. I mean, two episodes and I gave up on it. So Sander Clegane. 25-1. Okay, heads on the block time, folks. Give us your selection at this stage. Well aware, we're in January for the bumper. But Rory, you've already told us you took the 33s about an 80-1 winner before Antipost. So pressure's on with Cue Card. Give us a pick then for the bumper.
I'll tell you what I'll do first. There's a horse that I'd be interested in if he was being aimed at that, but he's not been mentioned at all thus far. I've sort of scanned through the notes to see if he was at all. Champ Kylie of Willie's won a bumper back in at the end of May and hasn't been seen since. I think the expectation was he'd go over hurdles, but there's been no sign of him so far. But he runs in the Masters in colours, and I thought if he ended up getting rerouted down this path, he'd be interesting. He's 33-1. But again, I've got no idea whether that's the plan. And normally if it is the plan, you don't get those sort of fancy prices about a once raced Mullins horse in a race like this, but he's
Brian Hill.
I'd keep an eye out on and see what kind of entries he gets in the next couple of weeks. But of those we've talked about, I think I'll go Pink in the Park.
Yeah.
I was very impressed with her. I don't know, again, she would have other options as well, but given her win was in September, I thought she's more likely than most to go to the Dublin Racing Festival, and she could be boosting her claims there.
Champ Kylie, 33-1, and Pink in the Park then for Rory. Frank?
I wouldn't be rushing to have a bet, to be honest, at this stage. If I had to, I'd probably say Redemption Day. But yeah, I wouldn't be. If I knew the Nolan horse was going, maybe I'd have a small few bob on that.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that without it being on the Brilliant Running Order. So it's interesting you mentioned. I think we might be at the
bad stage.
for those who've got,
I'm going to just have to bring him in and let him next to me so I can skip ads.
Ask him his thoughts on the bumpers. For those who are listening on headphones, and if you can hear in the background the screaming going on, that skip ads. Okay, so. Frank, they're lukewarm on the racing, but yeah, that's interesting. Sander Clegane mentioned, and also given a shout for Redemption Day, Rory, with the Champ Kylie and Pink of the Park. Let's move on to the National Hunt Chase next.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.
let's talk about the National Chase. We can't call it the 4 miler anymore. We haven't been able to for a couple of seasons. It's the 3 3/4 miler. Just rattles off the tongue. Let's run through this. Remember, is a novice chase, and you'd be amateur jockeys as well. Can find amateur jockeys. So at the time recording, we got Statler and Run Wild Fred, both at 9-2 joint favorites. The Irish dominate again, folks. 8-1 Fury Road, 8-1 300 through 5, the shortest price of the British horses at the moment. Ahoy Senor is 10-1. Where will he go? He's got entries in the, he's got an entry in the Gold Cup, interestingly. 12-1 Vanillier. What about his chasing career so far? 12-1 for Capodanno, Beacon Edge, En Baton, and 16-1 a big of the rest. Okay, folks, the National Chase. Before we get on to your thoughts on who on those principles, Rory, has it made any difference, the drop of a couple of furlongs?
I wouldn't. I mean, obviously, if it made no difference at all, then it's a strange move to have made. But it hasn't changed the way I look at the race thus far. Maybe down the line we'll be able to identify something there. But they're jumping two less fences. They're going, you know, a furlong and a half less. It's still a test of jumping and stamina, more so than any other novice chase at the festival. And I think it fundamentally retains its character, which is important because this used to be the Cheltenham Festival.
Yeah.
The National Hunt Chase was the race of you know, it was a 2-day meeting full of selling hurdles and chases. And the National Hunt Chase was the one race that everyone came for long before the Gold Cup or the Champion Hurdle were invented. So you do want to keep the character of the race. So changing the trip was a bit of an issue. Letting these professionals ride last year was even more controversial, but that's at least outrageous. We're back to rough normality here.
Outrageous. And for those who haven't seen the actual trophy as well, I tell you what, that it is enormous. Like, fair play to those who can lift it. I'm going to go straight to the top of the market. Statler, Run Wild Fred, Gordon Elliott, Frank, he's won the last two renewals. It does appear as though he targets this race, and he's got two of the top of the market already.
Statler's, but
no, not Statler, but Run Wild Fred, top of the market.
Look, he's an incredible record. I think it was Chicago Gray's first winner in the race, and he's obviously knows exactly what it takes to win it. And even the fact he could win with Ravenhill, just maybe a weak renewal, but at the same time, to win a race like that with him, who wouldn't have been maybe on anyone's mind even at Christmas for the race, was shows how good he is. Look, he has a strong hand here again. And you'd be surprised looking at the makeup of the market at the moment. If Willie or Gordon don't win it again, I can't see how it isn't between the two of them, to be honest. Maybe Gavin Cromwell, his one as well. But again, I think the British-based horses have a lot on their plate here. You've 300 through 5 for Paul Nicholls, perhaps, but there weren't too many catching my eye from the other side of the sea.
I think I gave the Galvin to Gordon Elliott there last year, and I apologised. It was Ian Ferguson who was training him at the time, wasn't it?
It was.
So before the calls come flooding, I tell you, it was Gordon Elliott trained Galvin for most of his career before he won this race, and he's turned out to be pretty good. Rory, to you, is there a type of horse or jockey? I suppose we'll get to the jockeys, because it's important, that you like in this particular type of race?
Yes, now this is more my kind of race compared to the Champion Bumper. The National Hunt Chase has shown, I'm not a trends man as such, but there's always been a strong trend to horses with experience, particularly at 3 mile plus. And there are certain races where you know trainers can prepare a horse at a shorter trip, maybe one or two runs, and then arrive for a race at the festival, and they're hard to assess. But these staying chases, this is a race essentially for national types, for grand national types, Irish national, Scottish national, whatever it happens to be. Those, they tend to go to horses with a bit of experience. You've got to be able to jump well at pace. You've got to stay very well, and you've got to generally cope with a pretty big field as well. And it hasn't been a particularly happy hunting ground for very lightly raced horses. And it's remarkable given that, if you look at the contenders we're talking about, a lot of those have had one or two runs over fences. And it's remarkable how well horses who've had 6, 7, 8, 9, even 10 runs over fences actually do in this race. So what you fundamentally want is lots of experience. And I'd ideally be looking at a second season chaser if I could find one who's proven in decent handicaps, if possible, as well. And thankfully, in this race, there is a
excellent.
There's an absolute standout. Yeah.
Well, before we get to him, I want to talk to Frank about the Boss's Oscar. Actually, I want to talk about Vanillier. Last year, his win at the Cheltenham Festival, Frank, looked like this horse was going to be a tour de force wherever he went. Hasn't quite turned out so far this season.
Yeah, but I know he was sick at Leopardstown last year, but he has that inconsistent sort of trait, doesn't he, where it's nearly one good run followed by a bad run. Like, he was fourth at Punchestown, definitely wasn't himself there either. His jumping isn't brilliant. Like, particularly Leopardstown the last day, he was very deliberate and slowed into a number of fences. Now, you know, there is a possibility you might be able to get away with the National Hunt Chase. Like, if you go back, Tiger Roll clouted half the fences that day and still won, but you'd like him to jump better, really. Yeah. He definitely has the engine. You'd have to respect him on what he did in that Albert Bartlett. Like, it probably wasn't a classic renewal of the race, but it wasn't a bad renewal either, and he's absolutely ran away from them. So the engine's there. It's just, can he sort his jumping out?
Would there be the potential where he, given his jumping, that they may go back, like so many novice chasers have, back over hurdles to stairs?
I wouldn't think that'll happen this season anyway. I think they'll persist. Okay. I do think that it is likely they'd go this route rather than the, it's the Brown Advisory now. It changes name so often I can't even keep up, but I think it's probably more likely for him than that race, particularly if Galopin Deschamps goes in the 3 mile race as opposed
they'll
to
all be avoiding him.
I think that would have a little bit of a bearing on this race. I think if Galopin Deschamps ends up in the 3 mile race, he might push a few of the stairs into the National Hunt Chase trying to, you know, avoid him.
Amazing. One run from one horse can already it's having a huge impact.
Yeah, but you know the way people are. I would not be running away from any horse, but you can imagine there'd be some that are kind of on the border, we'll just go to the other race, even though, you know, there might be six or seven horses of comparable ability in it. They just want to avoid the one that looks like a superstar. And you also have Brave Man's Game, who's been very impressive too, in the 3 miler, like so.
All right, Rory, you tantalized us. You said you were the trends man, but you picked out a horse on trends here. So who was it?
Yeah, Run Wild Fred is a standout in this race for me. I know he's up at the top of the market there, but he's got everything you want. Gordon's made it clear that he wants to run the horse in the race, and he was suggesting that the biggest problem he might have was convincing the owners to run. And obviously they've won the race before, but they're also keen to have runners in the National Hunt Chase now as they would have the O'Leary's. But Gordon clearly was working on convincing them that that's the race for this fella. And I think he had the perfect result over Christmas. Just being done for two in the Neville Hotels suggested that he would be better off stepping up and trip. Obviously his form is around 3 miles, but he gives the impression he'll stay very well. And he has that, you know, he's got the perfect experience being a Troy Town winner, having, I think, 10 starts over fences now. So that's, you know, that very much fits the mold of a horse you want in that race. And it also fits the mold of horses that Gordon's aimed at the race before, horses with plenty of experience. You know, Frank's made the point there about jumping ability with Vanillier, which I'd agree with. Tiger Roll, it wouldn't have been the obvious one there for a lot of people. But, you know, what we found out about Tiger Roll in times since then is that he's a clever bugger and he knows how to look after himself. So he could afford to nudge a few fences in his way around and still get the result. And you'd be worried about a horse like Vanillier and how he'd cope with it. And I'd also worry about any of those horses who've looked impressive making all on their chase debut and maybe going in there on the back of one or two runs. And we've seen that backfire before. So Run Wild Fred just seems to tick all the boxes. Because Gordon's had the race in mind for a while, he'll get the jockey he wants on the day as well. And he looks one of the most solid short priced ones, because there are horses in this race who are arguably better than him, but I think very few of them will end up running in the race. Whereas this is very much the race that Gordon wants to go for. Yes, the only thing he did wrong the last day, he seemed to take his eye off the ninth fence and just walked through it. But otherwise, his jumping was very good. Since he's had the blinkers on, he's been much improved in that department. You know, he won the Troy Town of a mark in the 140s, didn't he? So he's already higher rated than most horses who've won the National Hunt Chase. So very hard to pick holes in him, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, and if Gordon is sitting down with the dreaded cup of tea with Eddie and Michael, I suppose he can at least say, look, lads, you've only got 3 Cheltenhams left. If you want to get as many winners now between now and the end of your tenure as owners, and I suppose it's, look, this race is tailor-made for him. And Frank, I want to bring you back in here, and I want to talk about the UK runners. We've got 300 through 5, 8-1, and we've also got Ahoy Senior, who, again, remind, has been entered in the Gold Cup. Speculative, no doubt. Either those tickle the fancy?
Well, I thought I read something during the week that Ahoy Senior might go to Aintree.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, so I'd be very surprised if he ran this race. 300 through 5, well behind Vanillier and on his chase debut. But he turned that form around when he won at Cheltenham. The fact he's won at Cheltenham is a positive for him, because, you know, when he has only suffered one defeat, you kind of go, maybe it was the track. But yeah, you just wonder, is he good enough? He won a grade two with Doncaster, but wasn't much of a race. He would be for me. Like, funny enough, Paul Nicholls, obviously he's probably the greatest trainer of staying chasers nearly ever, and he's never won this race, if I remember off the top of my head. He's had a number of seconds, obviously, next destination last year, but it's just something I thought was a little bit interesting as well.
Is,
but
yeah.
300 through 5, yeah, you could see him running here. I'd be surprised if he's good enough to beat the Irish horses, though.
Okay, right. Rory's nailed his colour to the mast with Run Wild Fairness. If you fancy something at a bigger price, but Frank, who are you going for at this stage in the National Chase?
Yeah, look, I'd agree with Rory from the fact that Run Wild Fred is the most likely winner, and you'd imagine he'll shorten up a good deal as well, because I don't like Statler. I just don't think he's a stayer myself. Even the pace he showed on his chase debut, and when you look to Albert Bartlett and at Leopardstown at Dublin Racing Festival, he travelled relatively well and seemed to get outstaged on both occasions. So he wouldn't be for me at all. Look, Run Wild Fred's the most likely winner. I wouldn't give up on the boss's Oscar just yet, Garland, okay. Second string. Look, he didn't jump well in the Paddy Power, but he's had four or five chase starts now, so he's a bit of experience. His two runs to the festival over hurdles have been relatively decent. He was, you know, unlucky, got badly hampered in the Martin Pipe when he was staying on fifth. And, you know, when he looked like he was going to get pulled up, maybe go out in the second circuit, and then he was second to Pertemsov 1-5-1 to Mrs. Milner. The worry would be he's rated 143 over fences, and there might be a chance that he will go down the handicap route, maybe go to the Ultima, depending on what the English handicapper does to him. But he'd be the one I'd be looking at, maybe a 20-1. I wouldn't give up on him. I just think that sort of test might suit him.
Yeah, he's 21. It's not what the English handicapper is doing to the Irish horses this year. It's what he's doing to his own horses at the moment, because every one of them has been dropped like an anvil at the moment.
It's going to be very interesting to see how that impacts, you know, the handicaps this year. But
if the Irish win the first three handicaps, they'll be war. Yeah, even that, he's done everything he can. Rory, is there anything at a big price before we move on?
Not at this stage. I will have a look at it again when we see what the actual entries are for the race, which is holding us back a little bit at this stage. But yeah, there's always a good old honest staying plodder, safe jumper who can
gets around,
who can go well there at a price. But I've not dug him out yet.
I might mention one more. I've no idea whether he'd run here. I think the aim is the Scottish National, but I kind of liked Carrick Rambler when he won a handicap here at Cheltenham. Was in December. I don't know what the dates gap are between the National Hunt Chase and the Scottish National, but I wouldn't be shocked if he ran here and went on to the Scottish National.
It's in April, isn't it, the Scottish National?
Yeah, it's second or third week normally, so you might be able to do both. Whether they're just going to aim completely at the Scottish National and skip it, but he's one I wouldn't put a line through completely. He was wandering a little bit in the finish the last day, but he looked a bit tricky, but plenty of ability on his day.
Korak Rambler.
Yeah, he's a really nice type. Again, I wouldn't be sure that he'd be in for the race, but he's raw and he's improving and he's going to be a thorough stayer. So, I wouldn't disagree with Frank's assessment there.
Okay, quick fire questions from some of our listeners have come forward. Sean Coley, straight to Rory. I kind of touched on it. Obviously, outside of Patrick Mullins and Jamie Codd, who's the best amateur? It's actually for, he actually asked for a race like this, just in case.
For a race like this. Well, yeah, it's always, any of the leading point to point riders in Ireland, essentially, dig out your stats for the points. And it's always been Jamie Codd and Derek O'Connor and Barry O'Neill and jockeys like that there. So the guys are doing it day in, day out. No one's hiding any jockeys here. It's not like there'll be, we've had this guy on the sidelines. We know he's a superstar. The lads who are riding bumper winners and point-to-point winners on a regular basis are always the guys to go for. Experience is the most important thing. And again, the other aspect is claiming amateurs don't tend to do very well. Those jockeys claiming £7 and £5 tend to be at a disadvantage in races like this. Senior jockeys tend to do better. So yeah, the well-known names are the jockeys to be with.
It is, I think it's the fifth race on the card. And I know they've been rejigging it, but it was always when I was doing my play spot on the final day and the national chase, I basically just put in Codd, O'Connor, Mullins. Yeah. See you later. Like that. Put those three in, and one of them is definitely going to hit the frame, you'd be sure of it. Frank, you're back with us. Anne-Marie Lynch asked, and this is a very good question, actually, with the Irish horses obviously dominating the last few years. The BHA are doing the best, and we'll see how they go. Is there value potentially in backing the English trained horses at the festival this year?
I might have bought into that way of thinking a little too much last year and got my arse handed to me. Look, there might be examples of it, but I think you might be looking at the handicaps maybe more so. Like, you even look at the markets at the moment, what English horses are prominent? Shiskin, is he overpriced? I don't really think so. John Bond and Constitution Hill, they're probably at the sort of prices they're going to be on the day. What else is even there? I touched on St. Calvados earlier. He's starting to kind of get to the price where he probably should be. So, I think it'd be more handicaps. You might be able to poke out a few, maybe more so than anything else.
Even with the handicaps, I mean, the logic is sound enough that horses are getting dropped quicker now in the UK. But the problem, horses are only getting dropped for getting well beaten in handicaps in the first place, unless you think you've got particularly shrewd trainers who've got onto this and are laying horses out a year before, which is possible, then those horses who are well treated are the horses who are fundamentally out of form. And backing out of form horses in handicaps, you know, is not, especially horses who, you know, are just beginning to regress, those horses who might have been championship class at one stage and are now slipping into handicaps, backing that kind of horse has never been a positive move at Cheltenham. And I don't think the fact that a few of these look better handicapped than they would have been in previous years is going to change that massively.
Joe, he could have backed Get Me Out of Here like four festivals in a row to finish second. It'd be grand with his three zeros beside his name. The green and gold, folks. So watch out for those. Okay, look, lads, we have run way over time. My apologies for keeping it, but it was really good chat. Really enjoyed that. Don't forget, it is Cheltenham preview season. We're going to have a couple of enhances from the lads' picks on site. So watch out for those in due course. And massive thank you to Rob Catterson, who put the running order together. Really, really impressive. It's great. All I have to do is just read it out, lads. This is great. This job is fantastic. I feel like Ron Burgundy. Hope you enjoyed the show. That's our first episode of the new Countdown to Cheltenham series. We're going to be back with Ruby Walsh. So, Rory, question number one, Rory. Asian Maze, how did you muck that up? I wouldn't even have to do these podcasts if it was only for you falling off Asian Maze. He'll love you. He'll love you.
I'm sure he will.
We'll get Asian Maze into every single pod between now and the Cheltenham Festival. If you do have any questions for the guys, you can email us at fthm@paddypower.com. That can go straight to us. Or if you want to be on the punters panel, we'll do another one soon. Email the same address and register your interest and just let us know your background or otherwise, or questions you might have for the panel. But until next week, thank you very much, Rory. Hope you enjoyed your debut.
Certainly did. Thank you very much indeed.
Good man. Frank Hickey, thank you for yet another wonderful performance.
Yeah, babysitting / trying to.
Everyone's doing it, Frank. Everyone's doing it, except for me. But everyone else is doing it. We'll be back on Friday with our usual look ahead to the weekend on the Friday Tipping Show. But until then, stay safe, stay well, stay lucky, and register your interest for the Punters panel.